Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Hell yeah, all right. I couldn't get my microphone to work for a second, but now I can. What up?
Howdy.
How you doing?
Oh, I am hot.
All right.
This summer crap sucks.
How do I sound?
Good.
Okay. You'll never guess. My King B microphone stopped working.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So what happened?
I'm using one of my SEs.
Huh.
I don't know. Just stopped working.
Man, lazy B. It's supposed to be a worker.
I went live on, or I was about to go live on my stream on Friday, and I was like, oh, the volume slider, the volume like thing's not going up at all. It's like, well, that's bad because I got this old brand new DI that's like, you know, $400 thing. I hope that's not bad. And so I like tried out different things and nothing was working. And then I was like, you know what? I got this other microphone over here. I'm just going to try out the microphone and see if, oh, okay, that's it. As soon as I plugged in the other microphone, it was working.
Dude, everybody's shit is not working. Good friend of mine named Joe, his PC is having some problems. Carrie's PC broke like 30 minutes before we took Brisket to the vet last night. And then my rabbit fucking broke. So he was pissed. He's mad. So I don't know what's going on right now. I was telling Joe all our like Neptunes are in Saturn or whatever the astrology thing is. All our Venuses are in retrograde, y'all.
Yeah. That stuff.
Hey, Penel's here.
Hello. How's it going? Well, it sounds like something's off right now, but
Penel's here.
Hey. Hell yeah.
Zoobly zoo.
Everybody's shit's breaking. No big deal.
Everything is breaking. Oh my god.
My thing just got repaired. I mean, so I guess a little bit of that's over.
What got repaired?
Let me do an intro quick and we could talk about it on the show. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast, blah, 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 party cast. We're talking about shit breaking. Pernell, what's going on? What broke? What'd you get fixed?
Hey.
Well, my stuff broke months ago, but I finally got my computer fixed so I can actually start studying again. So it was a long time overdue and it was way overpriced, but it functions again.
Yay.
That worked. So back on the grind again. But
my computer almost went down for the count yesterday.
Oh, that's what you were talking about, bro? Almost broke?
Well,
remember, I came in after you were talking about it.
Well, I didn't talk about what my shit broke yet, but I was going to.
I was saying my good friend Joe had a PC complication. Yeah. Joe just assumed I was talking about him, so this is kind of awkward.
Another
you have more
Joe
than one friend named Joe.
Actually, I don't, now that I think of it. My friend's older brother's name is Joe, but I'm not a fan. So, yeah, I think you're the only one, dude.
I was
informed that my RAM was not performing at the level that it should be for my computer. So our good friend Big Adam recommended me some new RAM to buy. I picked it up, put it in. Everything was working fine. And I sent him the info and he was like, it's still not performing what it should be. Let's get into your BIOS. And that's where shit went south.
Oh, shit.
Once you got into the BIOS?
Yeah, first off, it took us way too long to figure out how to get into the BIOS on my computer. You're supposed to like hold F2 or F12 or F10 or escape or delete. There's like a dozen keys it could be, and we tried almost all of them until we figured out you could just like go through, hold shift and restart your computer, and it allows you to troubleshoot and go into the BIOS that way. We got in, he had me change some settings, and nothing stuck.
We
kept rebooting and nothing was working. Like the RAM just like it wasn't saving to the profile or whatever it had to do. So he's like, all right, we're going to get ridiculous with this. And he had me put in a value that was over what the RAM could handle. Like, are you sure?
Oh, no.
Like, are you sure? He's like, yeah, In the worst case, the computer will be like, I can't do this, and it'll just restart and we'll have to redo it. My computer didn't restart.
No.
Yeah, it went down. There were just red lights that I never saw before that aren't there now. And I had a non-working computer. So he's like, all right, we're going to have to take it apart. Can you get the battery out? I'm like, there's a battery in these fucking things? Yes, there's a battery in them. And I didn't know that. And I couldn't get it out. Yeah, couldn't get it out.
I did not know that either.
Could not get it removed. So the next step was we had to figure out exactly what motherboard I had. And he found a diagram of my motherboard and was like, okay, get a camera on the computer, get a laser pointer, get a flashlight, and we're going to figure out what terminals you need to touch to reset the computer. And he had me like phone propped up on the computer, laser pointer in one hand, like, is it here? And he's like, no, to the right. And I would move over to the right, and he's like, read that off. And it was whatever the hell it was, AB red LED 2 point whatever. He's like, okay, off to the right, off to the right. That's the one. And there were two pins, and he's like, get a screwdriver and touch the two pins together. Like, don't squeeze them together, just like touch both of them so that they're contacting each other through the screwdriver, and hold it for like 15 seconds. And then we rebooted the computer and it turned on. Thank Christ, we're halfway back. We got we're halfway there. Oh, this fucking computer's giving me gray hair. whatever hair I have left. We figured out that we got back to the BIOS. We put in a reasonable number for the RAM, rebooted it, and everything took, and it worked. And my computer's running smooth and fine and quick, and it was really touch and go for a few minutes, but we're doing a show, so progress.
Hey, very nice.
So who else broke shit this week?
My rabbit broke my fucking bank, dude. This rabbit is killing me, dude. Oh, he's fine, though. Happened? He's okay. I was just up all night. I had to take him to the emergency vet. He didn't eat for, like, a bunch of hours. He wouldn't eat or drink. And then, like, with rabbits, you gotta watch out for GI stasis. They can't, like, throw up. You gotta keep their digestion moving a lot. So if they start, like, if they don't eat or drink for, like, many hours, and then they're refusing their very favorite treats. Like, I was putting his favorite treats right under his nose, and he was turning his head away, and Carrie and I were like, all right, let's get the car. Let's go. But he's fine. Like, then, of course, a few hours into the vet visit, he started eating treats mysteriously again. We're like, okay, I guess you're good. He was kind of backed up. We have a lot of theories for, like, why that might have happened. I won't, like, bore y'all with that, but
he just loves the vet.
He loves the vet. Honestly, dude, Carrie and I were joking about that because whenever, like, I know I talk about my rabbit, like, he's a very special boy, but whenever we take him to a vet, especially if it's a new vet, all the vets and the vet techs will go ape shit over him. They're like, oh, he's so sweet. Oh, he's got a little personality. Oh, rabbits are supposed to be scared. You know that, right? They're supposed to be scared of new people. He'll just, like, he will shove his head under their hand to get more pets. And they're like, I just gave this little motherfucker a shot. Like, why is he trying to get a pet from me? So he's a little goofus. So anyway, I digress. But now I'm very happy. We had a long night. I'm heavily caffeinated right now. And we did it. We did. We got through the day. So thanks for listening. My rabbit broke, but he's fixed.
Better to have a goofus than a gallant, that's for sure.
Dude, yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Every day, Carrie, like, kisses his forehead. He's like, are you a goofus, baby? Do you think you're a gallant? Because that's how he said that. I don't know the right way to pronounce it. Be like, no, you're not. You're a goofus. He'll look at me. He'd be like, he said he's a gallant. And we just, like, all day, we're just making up shit our rabbit has said and, like, looking at each other and fabricating all of this. And I guess that's normal for pet owners, but it's pretty new to us. It's been such a great time. So he's gotten lots of kisses today because I was very worried last night.
Aww. And now he's back to snuff.
Yeah,
lucky nuffers. I'm not secure. Does anybody, everybody else here knows what we're talking about when we say goofus and gallant, right? I hope so. If not, I'll be said.
I do. Thank God.
We're old enough.
But hey, there's some children out there who might not know. So for the kids in the back,
they don't need to know. They don't need to know. They can look it up. Get on the internet.
No, that's the problem.
We need them.
They need to get into the magazines.
We need the kids tonight because we have a coloring book and we have, like, a virtual pet Tamagotchi going on. So we need, just for tonight, Pernell, we got to have the kids.
But I've exclusively got old VAS video games from the 80s and 90s, so we need the old people, too.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no one in between.
We have a crazy lineup tonight. It is all over the place.
This is quite the range.
Got a bunch of talk to talk about. What are we diving in now, or did anyone want to talk about stuff still?
You were just talking about how you need them kids. Get the highlights for children info out there.
We need the kids and the grown-ups to show up together to this podcast, and we need the kids to really be like wanting their parents' approval, and that's why the kids will be like, oh yeah, I totally want to play that Tamagotchi from the 1990s like you, Dad. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm going to shut this down, but that's what I'm thinking.
I was just going to talk about how my microphone broke. So all of my content tonight is pre-recorded, kind of a backup that I saved just for such an occasion.
Oh my God.
Wait, what?
This is a really good bit.
I mean, that's so funny, Joe.
That's exactly what I was saying before, but then
you guys are messing with me. This is pre-recorded, but it's then, not.
Oh, Aki, you're too much.
She's not even here. Son of a bitch.
This is some good shit.
This script is so dated terribly.
Hey, Joe, it sounds like we need to do some reviews.
Oh, my God.
No, we could wait.
We could wait.
Actually, before we get into reviews, there is an update that we have to give on the game Genshin that we talked about last week. Sent in the review.
Oh, and I have an update
flow,
too. Yeah.
Sent in the review to Polarity Flow, and they got back to us with an update. So really quick, Genshin, developed and published by Polarity Flow, released August 24th on the Switch for $17.80. The updates that we were given is that a dash tutorial has been added in the second room.
Cool.
Okay.
There is an NPC offering to activate easy mode in the fourth room if you've died more than 3 times to that point.
Okay.
Well,
love that.
Easy mode access is in the first room, has been made more obvious and easier to reach.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then the last big one that they mentioned is unique is now only used once in the store description.
Wait, oh my God, they really listen. Okay.
That is the positive change that we are creating in this world.
This is incredible. I can die happy tonight.
We've only made unique use once.
Yes.
That's amazing. God.
I checked the Switch store page. It's there only one time. So they updated the store page. It reads really well now. So good stuff.
I'm grinning so big right now. Like, this made my day.
The update. Yeah. I got that email. I'm like, this has to make it on a show.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm floored.
What updates
that's actually
did you have for it? You said that you wanted
nothing that big.
Oh, nothing that big.
No, I was just going to say, like, only just about an hour ago, some new stuff dropped in the Nintendo Switch Online, classic. I want to call them virtual consoles because I'm old, but that's not what they're called.
Nintendo Switch Online. Yeah.
Yeah. But did you see what came out?
Yeah. There's some weird games getting added.
Yeah.
What's this weird game you're talking about? I want to know.
Well, 3 of them are imports.
Yeah, like 3
translated and everything.
3 are imports that were already translated. Is
old Japanese.
Whoa.
I mean, so Kirby Super Star Stacker, which is a which is the Super Famicom version of the Game Boy game that came out over here. Stacker, but not Super Star Stacker, right? What was I gonna say? On the NES, we got Joy Mech Fight, which is like one of the very few one-on-one fighters that came out on the Famicom. It's like cute robots fighting each other, but that's like one of the biggest, like, you know, never came out in the US, like, misses. But it was like a much later game, but it's like a first party like fighting game on the NES. That came out. And also, Downtown Nekutsu March Super Awesome Field Day, which is basically a field day of sports starring the Kunio-kun gang. So,
was it like a sequel to Crash and the Boys?
No, but it stars the same characters. And
the funny thing is, it's probably available on that Kunio-kun in the World Collection that they have.
That's a good, yeah, that's a good point. I have that collection. I could look. It must be, because it's pretty popular. But, like, both those games got released and not translated into English at all. Like, no effort was made. And then...
Then the weird one.
The weird one is freaking Quest for Camelot on the Game Boy Color came out on the Game Boy Nintendo Switch Online. That's a licensed...
It's a movie game.
It's a movie game. Yeah, it was an animated movie that Warner Brothers put out in the 90s, starring, I guess, it's like a girl, but it's like a girl in the King Arthur mythos thing, you know? Like,
King Arthur's court, baby.
Kind of thing, yeah. But, like, the game itself, I actually had just recently played it. It's just like a bad Zelda type game. It's like it starts off with like an hour's worth of fetch quest before you even get started with any of the real action. And like the fetch quest is so that you can have a sword so that you can fight. It's like if the old man in Legend of Zelda was like, master using it and you can have this, you know, with the sword instead of just giving you one. Like you had to go out and like do stuff first before you could actually attack enemies. Like that's what this game is. And yeah, it's just like such an odd choice, and like it's so rare that like a licensed game ends up in a Tidus licensed game. Anyway, that just tickled me. Like that, it's one of the weirder releases that I've seen.
Yeah, that's when I got the email about it, I was very confused.
Yeah,
like is this is really the North American releases?
Yeah, because all that stuff was already available on the Japanese version of the Switch Online. Oh, just those three games. Mm. Like Superstar Stacker came out a couple months ago. Like that one, you know, even if that did come out in the U.S., it would have been super obscure because it came out in 1999.
Wow.
Like 3 years after the Nintendo 64 was already out.
I didn't know they were releasing Super Nintendo games that late.
Not Super Nintendo. They were releasing Super Famicom games that late, though. Yeah.
Oh.
And Kirby's always like the last thing that Nintendo will put out on one of its systems before shooting it in the head. So
Kirby 64 was one of the last ones, wasn't it?
Yep, sure was. But and in fact, this was like shortly before Kirby 64. Anyways, so that happened. I just wanted to draw attention to it because it's weird.
Cool. Well, should we dive into reviews now?
Sure.
We could.
Cool. Well, Pernell, you're up first, because the first game to talk about tonight is Rhapsody Marl Kingdom Chronicles, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released August 29th on Switch, PS5, and PC for $49.99. Enjoy the next verse of Marl Kingdom Adventures with Rhapsody 2, Ballad of the Little Princess, and Rhapsody 3, Memories of Marl Kingdom. Join Kururu, the daughter of Cornet and Ferdinand, as she pursues her dreams of true love and experience these classic RPGs in full forte as they take center stage with improved visuals, a heartwarming story, charming soundtrack, and an emotional conclusion. Rhapsody Marl Kingdom Chronicles comes ready to win your heart as it makes its welcome Western debut. Pernell, tell us about your time with Rhapsody Marl Kingdom Chronicles.
So basically, if you're not familiar with, which honestly I kind of wasn't up until this review was announced to me or offered to me. So I am familiar with Rhapsody, the first game, which was originally released on PS1 and then later got a DS port, of which that's the one I actually ended up buying. I skipped the original PS1 release because I was a fool. and it's a game that was heralded as being a pretty easygoing RPG that involved a princess who had the ability to control puppets. And the big thing that it was known for, aside from that, was that you could attack with pancakes. Like, all the art was like, hey, she fights with pancakes. I was like, this is pretty cool. I like
pancakes,
the idea about that.
Say?
That's right. She can battle with pancakes.
If y'all go back a few episodes, or a few dozen episodes, I reviewed that one when it came out.
Give it a listen.
Switch.
What? Pancakes?
Because it may factor a little into this review too. Because this game is a direct sequel to that Rhapsody game. They are two games in one, in which there was definitely some level of interest in them, because as recently as like a year ago, people were still like, were questioning whatever happened to that dead 10-year-old fan translation project. And the answer is, we don't need it anymore. because these games got released. And quite
take
frankly,
that, they are dedicated fans.
Nah, well, I hope they take that to their Nintendo Switch consoles and play it because it is actually a pretty good package of games. So the second game in the franchise stars Karuru, as Joe mentioned. That is the daughter of the main character of the first game and the prince she was seeking in said game. And just like her mother, she has a desire to do the same thing. And she wants to go out on a journey to do so. And this involves her and her best friend journeying together in different ways. And, of course, meeting other characters and joining up with other characters as they do so. The big interesting gimmick here, similar to the first game in that regard, too, is the fact that in addition to normal story sequences, there's also musical numbers that play during the game. Some of which, actually, who am I kidding? They're all fairly catchy. It's one of those games where I started out playing it, and my old cackled old like dark heart here was like, oh, God, a freaking love story with this nonsense. I don't have time for this. But then they all talk about friendship and growing up and learning lessons in this. Then they start singing about it. And I'm a sucker for musicals. So right then and there, I was on board. The musicals themselves are not translated. They're in Japanese, which I'm kind of okay with because that's what the original tune was key to. But the normal dialogue was translated, so you can keep up with that if you are so interested in doing so. Aside from that, though, it's a pretty standard RPG, and in a NIS fashion, it's broken up into different acts, just like most of their other games are. And you control a party of up to four characters, more so. And when you get these characters, it's a typical turn-based combat system, but the interesting gimmick here is that there are two different types of skills. There are puppet skills and regular skills. You're like, what the hell is a puppet skill?
Just like in real life.
We all got a little puppet skill in us. But now, unlike only some of us in the real world can talk to puppets. They're likely committed at this moment. But the ones who aren't are out there battling wars that we have never seen. And they do so by summoning their puppet army, just like you can in this game. When you find characters...
Everyone is fighting their own battles with puppets.
Dude, puppet. This review is already going hard. Can I just say that? My mouth is like hanging open. This is gold.
The main character has the interesting ability to communicate with puppets. When she comes across a puppet, which is funny because this world has them just kind of in different places that you would not expect people to possess puppets. But when she comes across them, she's able to communicate with them, and she has the ability to play her magic horn and imbue them with power, in some cases allowing them to join her party as supportive combatants. And when she uses her abilities that are tied to the puppets, it is powered by the same currency that you use to shop at the stores, which is an interesting mechanic that I've noticed in these games. I've never played a game that does this before. Like I said, the money you spend is also the currency used to cast puppet skills. But the human characters and the puppet master themselves, they have special skills as well, and those are powered by hit points. So you got to be mindful of that. But you might ask yourself, okay, well, is there any other potential incentive to using puppet skills? And the answer is, well, obviously, dummy, you're controlling puppets. But in addition to that, when you use puppet skills as opposed to regular skills, you actually build up a meter that's reflected in the form of musical notes on a bar. And once you've maxed out the bar, you'll get one tick on a counter. There are special skills associated with this ticker. And when you use enough of, you get enough of them, you can activate these skills and do like pretty much screen clearing attacks, such as dropping sugar rock candy or pancakes or flan or any number of random food items, because of course you can, on the opponents. And like I said, do like a general screen clearing attack and damaging and killing them. I actually like the combat in this game. And the best thing about this, and also it's going to go for the next game I talk about too, which won't be long because they're fairly similar with a few slight differences. The sprites in these games are freaking fantastic. These are classic NIS sprite work. Sprite work that they became most noted for when Disgaea 1 came out, when Atlus published it on their behalf, because since unfortunately a lot of people skipped the original Rhapsody, seeing those sprites at work in Disgaea floored a lot of people. Unfortunately, we also didn't get La Pucelle back then. That's the reason why we didn't get to see these cool sprites in action up until then.
We got La Pucelle eventually.
Yeah, eventually, but I'm saying back then we didn't. We got Disgaea after Rhapsody. True. But with that said, Honestly, the sprite work in this game sticks out like a thunk. We haven't seen it in action in a new release in quite a long time. They've since upgraded all their sprites to 3D art. And even before that, their sprites got a bit more, you know, upscale at the release of the PS4. This guy threw them 4 on the PS3. So this was a nice throwback and call to form. And I'm very happy to see these guys at work. And also, there's a lot of cool monsters here that are new to my eyes, because I don't think they were used in future games. So kudos to them on that. But yeah, honestly, quite frankly, I like this game quite a bit. I like both of them quite a bit, but I should probably talk about, you know, Rhapsody 3, Chronicles of Marl Kingdom, whatever the heck it is, because unlike this game, the second one, this is more of a sort of a vignette story book, in which case you're taking on multiple smaller stories that take place across the entire series, the first game and the second game, and scenarios that didn't take place in either game. So it's almost like a 2.5 and a mini 3 all in one game, thereby making it 3. So that's why a lot of times, you heard me say earlier that you might really need access to having played the first game to really get the most out of this, because you'll, like, for example, be thrown into a scenario with Cornette where she's already on her quest and she's already met certain people, but now something's occurring that you probably didn't see in the first game, and you're like, what the hell's going on here? But though, admittedly, as someone who didn't play through the entirety of Rhapsody 1, it didn't bother me too much because I know enough about General Rhapsody, and they give you a little bit of a slight story header before getting into a proper to get you primed. But if you've played the first game, and of course the second, which is packaged here, you'll get more appreciation when these scenarios occur. But one thing that's interesting about this compared to the previous game is that even though it's also turn-based RPG combat, it's done using a very different party system. You will have 4 character slots, but those characters can each have 3 quote-unquote partners associated with them. They are also party members, and those party members affect the stats of the person leading that party slot. So,
that's how they do it in Dragon Sinker.
See, we'll have to talk about that, because I have never heard of that game, but now I want to play it, because game that does this is up my alley.
It's an interesting one. I reviewed it like 10 years ago.
Yeah, we'll be talking shop, because this is a cool concept, in my opinion. You might find yourself thinking, well, that's a lot of characters to be worrying about. How am I going to worry about controlling all the 16 of these characters or whatever? And the answer is, you kind of don't. Instead, you primarily control the first 4 in the lineup, and the rest kind of do what they want to do on their own, with one exception. If a puppet master is the leader, they can control puppets as their partners that they can, quote-unquote, equip. And when you have puppets equipped, you can select them instead of a normal attack for your character, and then you can give a command to every puppet, which is pretty useful if your puppets have cool abilities. So, like, especially if there's a certain boss where you might need 2 people to heal, and your puppets are the primary healers, well, you better get 2 puppet masters out there. But it's interesting to be able to, like, okay, I'm going to strategically command these different puppets here and here so I can keep the rest of my guys in line. Because once enemies start dropping group attacks and they hit hard, you're going to wish you had some planning with some decent healing. The pancake attacks and all that are back in this game as well. Same general mechanic is involved in using them, which is that you got to have puppets do attacks, not normal characters, and then build up that gauge and then use the rewards, they call them, to activate them. But one other thing I like about this group party system is, from what I could tell, I might be wrong here, and if someone in this is listening and they hear this, by all means, let me know, but I assume this is what happened. If you combine certain characters together, you can unlock special attacks that they would gain access to. Most notably, the most easy way to come across this is, for example, if you come across 2 different enemies or monsters that have, like, elemental attack, like, say, water and water, and you put them in the same, you know, group of 4 party members, you'll unlock the higher level water skill that can attack everybody on the other side of the screen. So it becomes handy to have those guys together. By that same token, though, if one of them gets killed by a group attack in a battle, you'll lose access to that skill. So it pays to kind of protect them as best you can. So, oh, and one thing I need to mention also that didn't exist in the other game is, whereas there are puppets in this game, the monsters you fight can also be recruited to join your side. sometimes they'll randomly join you at the end of a battle, and when you they join you, they work just like that's pretty much all the people that you can equip in your party, so to speak. And depending on who you equip with what group, that'll augment the stats and the like too. But if you use the rewards, like the pancakes, the flan, the strawberry shortcakes, whatever, to defeat them instead, that increases your chances of an enemy defecting to join your team at the end.
Like, this lady's got some cake.
Yeah, you ain't want to shoot. Wouldn't you join up for that during that dark, nasty woods? Yeah, you've been licking moss off of trees for weeks. And this girl slapped you with a strawberry shortcake. Bam!
If somebody defeated me with a giant pancake, I would be on their side.
Absolutely.
Big save.
The most realistic party recruitment system in video gaming to date. We're locking it in. Covered. But as I do like these games quite a bit, they have a lot of heart, a lot of charm. The sprite work is still freaking beautiful in 2023. Anybody says otherwise, they're wrong. And I'm not hearing any arguments to the contrary. The music is good. The musical numbers are good. And I'm just sold. I think it's a quality game. And the fact that they released this, because, I mean, they've been on the streak of releasing, like, you know, their Plenty Classics collections, but it's just re-releases of their old games that we've already gotten, which is nothing wrong with that, of course. There's games that some of us didn't get access to. They were hard to acquire at the store. Now you can get them on the Switch. But there's something really nice about them saying, here's a game you never had access to back in the day, and we're just going to port it over here, and now you can play it for the very first time. And translate it. Yeah, you can take that, Kirby Superstar Stacker.
Actually, on that note, I can't remember the title now. The Nekutsu whatever game. It is on the Double Dragon and Kunio Kun game, and it's translated on that collection. So it's in the original Japanese on the NES NSO, but the English version is on the Double Dragon and Kunio Kun Retro Brawler
nice
bundle.
Get so that brawler on. But yes, this cool, is Rhapsody. Legit. No, Rhapsody's good. Rhapsody's good. Like, I wholeheartedly recommend this game. Like, I mean, admittedly, if you're not fond of cheesiness in your games, I mean, again, you know, little girl princesses seeking their prince on a white horse by going on a wild adventure with their best friend, who's the daughter of a corporate conglomerate manager. If you can't get down with that kind of a narrative, then I understand if you decide to turn away from this. However, if you can take a tongue-in-cheek aspect of it and just appreciate what they're doing here, I don't but think also, you'll come away disappointed.
But also, we got to know, what's wrong with you?
That is a good question. What is wrong with you? And if you say masculinity, I'm going to say, get the fuck out. Play fun games. Don't worry about that shit. But yeah, this is an easy recommendation, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, clocks in at $50, your official verdict.
Oh, this is a genuine buy. Pick this bad boy up. If I didn't get the review copy, I'd already be buying it. Correction, I actually almost bought it until Best Buy told me they put it on the shelf too early. They couldn't release it to me. So there you go.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to buy it. I might actually see if my friend is going to sell her copy because she beat it already. And she has this thing of like selling games as soon as she beats them. So.
Wow.
But she likes Rhapsody so much that her online name is like the name of the antagonist in the series.
Oh,
and
wow.
me with Liar Exaggerate, she's had it for like decades. Yeah, Marjolaine. Awesome. Yeah.
NIST doesn't
she won't.
Release their games on Xbox. So.
Boo.
Name.
Wow.
Moving on. Next game is Taito Maelstrom. I can't talk.
Maelstrom.
Yes, Taito Maelstrom 2. Next game is Taito Milestones 2. I did it. I said it. Developed by Innin Games, Yay. Published by Innin Games and United Games Entertainment. Released August 31st on the Switch for $39.99. On the heels of last year's first Taito Milestones comes a new collection with more of Taito's original arcade classics. 10 entertaining classics from Taito's history featuring various genres and themes. Chris, what are those games and are they good?
Yes, so, Taito Miles Per Hour 2, I don't know, that's where I got it, or Miles Taito Per Hour 2, I'm trying to make a Tails joke out of this, yeah, I'm so not disappointed, but like surprised at how many people are like, I didn't know that Tails' real name was a pun.
It's like, did you not play Casino Night Zone, because they write it in shining letters all over the walls in that.
Yeah. I mean, geez. It's like in the splash screen at the beginning of the game, too. Anyways.
Thank you. Kids today, dude.
Kids today.
Don't even get me started.
Okay, so, yeah, so Taito Milestones. Well, if you didn't know, I am a Taito fanboy. I would consider it my overall favorite developer, and or at least publisher, of games. So I do tend to collect Taito stuff whenever I can, and indeed, I did buy the first Taito Milestones as a physical when it came out. It's good stuff. Lots of early 80s kind of things you wouldn't normally expect or aren't, you know, in other collections kind of things. Like, you know, it's got like Kicks and Space Seeker and Alpine Ski and stuff, but no like Space Invaders or like, you know, things you would expect like that. So I could tell right away that by Milestones, they mean actually kind of somewhat obscurities that don't fit anywhere else. And that is where Taito Milestones 2 definitely slots right in. We got 10 games here. Now, these games are from the Arcade Archives. They are literally the Arcade Archives versions of these games. That is to say, you get all of the same, you know, as you've probably seen on the Switch eShop, the Arcade Archives are $8 a piece. Very faithful recreations of arcade games with extra quality of life options and like quick saves and like, you know, extra easy modes and things like that. You know, there's like 1,000 of them. And 7 of these games are available a la carte. We'll talk about that in a bit, too. There's actually 3 exclusives on this and 1 extra exclusive that I'm excited about. Yeah, so it's 10 games. It's just you turn on the game and it brings up a splash screen with some background music, and you got 10 games to choose from. They won't even give you the English version of the title. So if you're looking at Kiki Kai Kai or Liquid Kids, you're just looking at the Japanese text and you have no idea what it is if you're just, you know, getting into this stuff. I just kind of like guessed and then I turned out to be correct. yeah, so we'll talk about the games. Yeah, basically this collection overall is kind of skewed towards the later 80s, and with one exception, and like more into the 90s. So we got, you know, bigger, more beautiful. Let's just face it, like early 90s just rocked in terms of arcade games. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. So yeah, I'm just going to go from left to right and talk about each game just a little bit. We got Ben Barrow Bay, which is a weird single-screen platformer. This game was kind of an inspiration for what would later become Bubble Bobble. You play a superhero who is also a little fireman who has to rescue his girlfriend at the end of the stage, but the building's catching on fire. Well, thankfully, he's got a big old hose for that, actually a fire extinguisher. So the key is to kind of go from the top floor down to the bottom floor, fighting fires and enemies as you go. It's very difficult, but also very comical, kind of frustrating to play, but it's one of those where you'll just keep dumping in virtual quarters, you know, to try and beat it, because it's actually pretty cool and very cute. So that one is, that's the one kind of outlier in that it's from 1984, and it was released as a separate, you know, Arcade Archive release, so that's available by itself. And then we have The Legend of Kage, which is one of the more well-known in the collection. This is a ninja game where you are, I guess, kind of a ninja. His name's Kage. And you run basically from right to left and left to right. And then sometimes you jump vertically in order to get through stages to try and rescue this princess. Like, you know, pretty popularly had a NES release that was pretty panned because it looked even worse than the arcade game. The arcade game looks fine. It's just it's a little unusual because, like, if you push the, you know, you got a shuriken button to throw a shuriken. You got a little knife button to swing your knife. And if you press up, then you jump. The thing is, if you press up and jump, you basically take flight. This is a ninja who can jump 30 feet into the air, and it doesn't help a thing. There's no reason to do this. He just does. So if you want to sail across stages and then get killed quickly, Legend of Kage is for you. Yeah, another game kind of the era is 1986's Kiki Kai Kai, which is a top-down kind of shooter where you play a priestess, basically a Shinto shrine maiden is what they're called. And you basically run around stages and fling like these card things at enemies and stuff. You're like a bunch of yokai that come and attack you. It's very cute. Pretty darn difficult. And of course, it is the game upon which the popularly rare Super Nintendo games Pocky and Rocky is based on. So Kiki Kai Kai is the girl, and then in the Super Nintendo game she's joined by a raccoon. So this is her original adventure. It's also, like Legend of Kage and Benbarrow Bay, is available separately, and in fact Kiki Kai Kai is pretty popular for Taito to add to compilations and such. Most of these games have been in other compilations, so I'm not even going to talk about those. I'm only talking about whether they're available on the Switch separately from this or not. Then we have The New Zealand Story, which some fans of NES obscurities will know as Kiwi Craze, which is a platform puzzle game where you play the most adorable little Kiwi in the world who is trying to save his girlfriend. That's a common theme in a Taito game and video games of this era at large. This is an 88 game. It's nice and bright and colorful. It had a really fantastic TurboGrafx-16 port, but the NES one is pretty interesting too, because they replaced the soundtrack with Tim Fallon, which, you know, is pretty rad. But yeah, The New Zealand Story is in there, and that's a really good one. I really enjoy that one. It's extremely cute, and yeah, definitely worth a play, and also is available outside of this collection on the Switch. Okay, so then we get to one of the possibly the biggest highlight of this, for me at least. We have Darius 2. For some shmup fans, they may pronounce this Darius. An even bigger Taito fan than myself, friend of mine, pointed out that actually it's closer in the Japanese pronunciation to just call it Darius. But anyways, so Darius 2 is of course the sequel to one of the greatest shmups of all time, and it's the one where you are a ship who is fighting fish. you're shooting down big fishy boys across different planets and stuff. It's really rad, really, really, really hard. So here's the thing. Darius 2 has, like all the games, it has several versions that came out, right? And you know, those of you may know that they came out with a Darius Cosmic Collection arcade for the Switch and for other systems and such, which includes three different versions of Darius 2. One properly called Darius 2, two of them called Sagaya, which is the game's name when it came out on certain systems like the Master System and Genesis. But not the Game Boy, that's a port of the first game, but we're not talking about that. Here's the thing, of all those versions, they ported the two-screen version of the game. So this game used to be spread across two screens set next to each other in the arcades, but a later version actually had three screens stitched together, just like Ooh. The very first original Darius. This is that three-screen version in its... As far as I know, this is the only time I've ever seen it come out. So this is the three-screen version of Darius 2, completely unique to this collection, as far as I know. It's not even available a la carte, and the three versions that are available in the Darius Cosmic Collection are not this version. And they actually have this really cool thing in it. I don't know why this hasn't come out by itself, because it's got so many cool options. One of them is to actually kind of separate the three parts of the screen where it kind of does look like you're playing on three monitors. Like, they actually have this kind of three monitor effect that you can turn on if you want to. And I thought that was so cool. So yeah, and Darius 2 also, it's just a fantastic game. So like, that to me would have sold this collection to me just by itself. But anyways, we must move on because we're only halfway through.
Oh geez.
Yeah. So that's Darius 2. Liquid Kids is a freaking adorable platformer. It's later than New Zealand Story, so the characters' sprites are even bigger and cuter. And once again, we're fighting with bubbles, basically, you know, knocking out enemies and making them all drenched and stuff, and they can dry off and like come and attack you again unless you defeat them. Your character, however, this time is a hippo, which looks like a platypus. I actually thought it was a platypus But turns out he's a hippo, and his name is Hippopo. So that was my first clue to ignore there. But yeah, this is a rare one to see. It was ported to the PC Engine and Saturn, but like, and then I think it showed up on one of the Taito Legends collections. But like, yeah, this is, and it is actually also available by itself on the Switch. So maybe it's not that rare. But it's like, this is my first time really playing it, and it was quite good. Like I said, big old sprites on the screen. You gotta love it. Okay, then Gun Frontier is the next one. Gun Frontier is a really cool one. It's basically a shmup, but if it was rootin' and tootin' along with the shootin', because your actual ship is like a big six shooter with wings, and it kind of takes itself seriously. It's a little bit like steampunk Old West and stuff. Really cool concept, and yeah, it's a vertical shooter. It plays a little bit like Raiden, but without the big lightning bolts and stuff. But it's got that kind of thing where you destroy lots of the environment and pick up little power ups as you go. Big old bosses to fight and stuff. Great time. And also, is that one of the? No. Okay, we're almost there. Okay, next game is Solitary Fighter. Now this one's a little bit of a mystery to me because it's apparently the sequel to one of the greatest arcade names of all time. The game is called Violence Fight. Yeah,
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, it was a arcade like fighter. It's from the era, which another one of these games is. It's from the era where like arcade games were like, well, what would be the best graphics? Oh yeah, make the sprites as big as possible. So the characters in this game, in Solitary Fighter, are about four times the size of a Street Fighter II character. They are like almost 30% of the screen. Huge characters fighting each other. But the action is very simple. It's lots of punches and kicks and just kind of combinations of that. It almost plays more like a Double Dragon type of game. But, you know, it's a one-on-one fighter. It's kind of cool because it's got like rowdy crowds. Like they'll throw bottles into the fight that will actually do damage. Sometimes a character, an NPC, will come out of the crowd and just start stabbing. And you have to deal with that on top of the character that you're dealing with. And it's also got some hilariously, like, this is Japan's idea of an American kind of characters, including one from Texas who is pretty offensive, honestly. Just as a Texan myself. And one of them looks like Zombie Mr. T, so you gotta love that. It's a frustrating game to play, but it's such an oddity. Like, you will, like, turn this on and, like, challenge a friend just to show them how absurd it is. So, yeah, Solitary Fighter is not available outside of this collection, too. I don't even think Violence Fight is, so. And it also has one of the most hilarious splash screen intros. I'll read that maybe after the podcast if you really want to hear it, because it's one of my very favorite, like, you know, this is the story and we didn't really think anybody who knows English would have read this.
I really want to hear it.
Yeah, I will. It's just, you know, we got two more games and then we'll have it. Okay, so the next game is Metal Black, which is a very well-known shmup in the of its like era. In fact, the Metal Black ship is available in what do they call it? Darius Burst Chronicle Saviors, which, you know, they have like the DLC ships that are from different games that you can play as. The Metal Black ship is one of those ships. It's actually they called it Project Gun Frontier 2, but it's not really related to Gun Frontier 2. If anything, it's more like another Darius game, just in a kind of darker, more atmospheric kind of setting, and instead of giant fish, you're mostly fighting like giant bugs and like Contra style aliens and stuff. But it's a lot of the same kind of thing. It's like power ups all over the screen that you try to collect, and they will make your gun like stronger until you get killed. But they also will raise up this beam attack that you know, if you save up enough beam, then you can really fire out this like screen clearing just monstrosity of lasers. That, you know, will really help you take down the very tough bosses that that this game throws at you. So, great time. Gunfighter, Gunfighter, what am I saying? almost saying Violence Fighter. Metal Black. That's a Metal Black, yeah, very worthwhile game. And then finally, we have Dino Rex. Dino Rex is a one-on-one fighter with a difference. This is a 1992 game, again, ascribing to the theory that in order to have the best graphics, you must have the largest graphics. But they do it to great effect here, because what it is that you pick your human character, but who's actually going to fight the battle for you is a big giant dinosaur. Because this is like a kind of reimagined kind of Amazon style, like, you know, natives like that control and train dinosaurs to fight each other. So you're picking your character, but you're also picking your dinosaur, and you fight as the dinosaur. But the dinosaurs are a little hard to control. You're kind of more suggesting what they do. So it's a fighting game, but it's not a very precise fighting game. It's more like, I don't know, like, it's hard to compare it to anything because it's so, you know, such a thing unto itself. But you can play as an obese purple T-Rex, and that's what makes it worth the price of entry. And this is also another game that's not available outside this collection. So that is all of the Taito Milestone 2 games.
Cool. Well, the collection clocks in at $40. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, this is a simple math problem, because 7 of these 10 games are available outside of the pack for $9 each. So any 4 or 5 of them, and you would be saving money by purchasing this collection. If you have any interest at all in Solitary Fighter, Dino Rex, or this bomb-ass version of Darius 2, then, you know, those 3 are not available outside of this collection. So there's your price of entry right there. Overall, this is a fantastic collection of rarities and obscurities, and like just enough popular stuff to be like, oh yeah, okay, I know about that. But like, yeah, it's the kind of hidden aspects of them, and of course the games that are, you know, unique to this collection that really sell it. I mean, it's a buy it all around. Yeah, thank you, Brooke. Yeah, this is a winner all around. I can't. You know, apart from, you know, maybe like Ben Barrow Bear or something like that, there's not really anything here that I don't even dislike that game. It's just freaking hard. So, yeah, it's all a bunch of likable games and some really awesome ones, too.
Cool.
But no, like, huge Taito games like you would think implied by the title Milestones, you know?
Yeah. Well, it still sounds like a solid collection. Hopefully they bring it to more platforms.
Can't wait for number 3.
Next game is Wildagachi Virtual Pet, developed and published by Red Deer Games, released August 25th on the Switch for $12.99. Welcome to Wildagachi Virtual Pet, the ultimate game for all animal lovers. Choose your favorite animal, take care of it, and watch it grow in real time. These adorable pixel art creatures will definitely steal your heart. Brooke, tell us about your time with Wildagachi Virtual Pet.
Okay, I asked for this game, I think, for what it is, it's decent, but I got to call BS on the intro line in the eShop blurb, which Joe tastefully left out, and now I'm going to read. The ultimate simulation game for all animal lovers. This is not the ultimate simulation game for all animal lovers. In fact, I would put a dub on a bet that whenever, whatever little homie wrote that blurb, he was like snickering to himself as he wrote that, because they know it's not. The devs don't think that either. This is basically a joke. The blurb ends with, when your pet becomes an adult, you can choose another one that needs your attention. But why did they say that? Now they're selling themselves short. You can choose another one before that. This is not a one pet at a time situation, unlike the Tamagotchis of old that this game is referencing. Y'all can be having every pet. Y'all selling yourself short on this one. And that seems really hard to do, because if you check my Twitter, where I retweeted this show tweet tonight, you will see a screenshot of the graphics here. And it's basically Tamagotchi level graphics. So flaunt what you do have, because this game had more going on than I thought. Anyway, rant over. Question for the group time. Do y'all remember Tamagotchis?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you have one? Raise your hand if you owned or played with one, and then tell me if you raise your hand, because this is a podcast.
I own one currently that I haven't played yet.
Sweet.
I never owned one.
I had Tamagotchi. I, of course, was doing chow raising. I did when the Pokemon version of it came out, I did that. I was all about the pet craze. So
what pet did you have? Do y'all remember what pets you had?
Now you're asking too much. I had pet that looked like a pet. I just remember having a friggin' Tamagotchi and doing things.
Hey, like, that's cool.
Because the funny thing was, like, back then, it was still, like, you know, fairly new, a new concept, similar like a pet rock, but digital. So
yeah,
you just do it. You went to school, you kept it in your pocket, you took it out during break, and it pooped. I gotta clean this up.
Dude, I thought they were so cool.
Mine is a Dragon Quest slime.
Oh my god, that's so cute. Oh, I didn't know about that. And now I immediately want to buy one, and I know it's going to be like $90 on eBay for like an old ass dirty one.
Yeah. That's amazing. Was it a later release as a collectible, or did they actually release back then?
That's such a good idea.
They're collectibles, and they're from the 90s. But I think there's some newer ones.
Yeah,
there's some newer ones you can buy, I think.
So this release is not this dev's first foray into making Tamagotchi-type virtual pets for phone apps. And now Switch, I believe their first release of this type was Dogagotchi and reuses a lot of the same assets as this one. Hey, at least they didn't use the word unique, but I just did, so I better hear some ethereal whispering. Thank you, thank you. Okay, back to the game. This is Spirit. I'm trying to drag this Tamagotchi review out, like, comically, and Joe's going to just be so mad at me by the end. This spiritually is a Tamagotchi. I mean, it's almost physically a Tamagotchi programming-wise, Imho, even though the level of pixel art and number of pixels used to achieve the pictures of the animals on the screen is actually similar to what we grew up with. The game also, I kind of got to give him props for that. The game also colors the screen like an old Game Boy or Tamagotchi would look. How all LCD screens, like, you could almost see the cells on them, and they were all like that dark teal. First, I opened up this game and I saw the graphics and I was like laughing my ass off. This is not a real game. But then I started tinkering with it and I was surprised to find I kind of like playing with it, creating my pets and caring for them. And then it hit me, the real reason that I asked Joe if I could review this game. The memories came flooding back and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Do we have a clip of like some sad music? Is there like a sound bite with a sad violin?
The only sad that I have is
that kind of works here. I'm glad to know we have that. I'm going to be asking for that one. Can Chris, like, hum some sad music? He's a musician. No, just playing. I never had a Tamagotchi growing up. Imagine violin music playing. I wanted one really, really, really bad, but I never got one. I never got to play with a virtual pet. Thank you, Purnell. Tamagotchi situation. Until now, this is where in my notes it says change from sad music to air horns. And I don't know why I wrote this in there. Remember how the first year I was on this show, y'all asked me what my favorite Zelda game growing up was. Thank you. I love that. That's my fave. Y'all asked me what my favorite Zelda game growing up, late 2021 on a show. And I had to admit I didn't play that many games growing up. And that's why I'm such a game nerd now, except for that one beautiful summer I spent with one of those 300 game discs and a big old yellow PC. It was the summer of love. I remember it like it was just yesterday. Just kidding, Joe. I'm sorry. This review could have been over in 2 minutes. I'm just being obnoxious, dragging this out because I want to hang out tonight. I'm gonna jump into the features. Wildagotchi is kind of what it says it in the title, but you don't realize it until it's too late. It's a Tamagotchi for wild animals. These are pets you shouldn't have. So we've got some forbidden fruit shit going on in here. You start out, you have your choice of three pets. If you do well and you don't kill them, unlike some people, Brooke, you can unlock more types of exotic pets. There's a lot, actually. At the beginning, you can choose from wolf, gorilla, and panda. You don't have to choose between them. You can go ham and start with three different pets. This might have actually been where it all started to go horribly wrong for me, but let's stay on track here. Let's say you start with your three starter Pokemon. I mean, wild animals that you shouldn't have as a pet. They all live in their own respective little worlds on your Switch, and they don't interact or anything, but you can't have them. Just like the Tamagotchis of old, you have to feed them when they're hungry to keep them alive. Feeding them or not feeding them, or just allowing the passage of time alone, they will get dirty. Feed them and a little poop with the scent waves coming off of it that Purnell referenced a bit earlier will appear on the screen. And you got to press the cleaning button to clean that up. This affects their hygiene stat. You need to keep that stat decent or they will die. Lots of ways to kill these guys. You have to make sure they're not hungry for too long or they will die. You also have a medicine button. If they get sick, there can be a little skull and crossbones kind of floating around over their head to heal or cure them of their ailment. You press the medicine button. Their last stat, you must also entertain them. You gotta have fun with them. You gotta play with them. They're your baby. This is where I think the game starts to differ and become beefier and more involved than the Tamagotchis of the 90s, because to play them You get to play a mini game with your pet as the main character you're controlling, which is also your pet, and it'll go into like a different game screen with the same graphics. And the animals are just like children. They don't want to play video games with their dad and lose. They want to win. So every pet has a different kind of mini game. And there's multiple mini games for each pet you can unlock as they grow up, but that's, you know, I don't want to while out here. The panda has a mini game called Infinite Jump. You jump on platforms on a vertically scrolling screen, trying not to die by jumping enough times and not hitting the bottom of the screen as it comes up at you, if you know what I'm talking about. The wolf has a mini game where you basically jump over obstacles that come at you while you run across the screen. The trick in this game isn't jumping over the obstacles in time. It's actually timing your jumps between obstacles and kind of planning your moves, how fast you're going to jump over them if you see multiple obstacles coming up at once. The gorilla has a mini game called Obstacles Rain. You walk the gorilla left and right. Those are your only two controls. Each of these games has just one or two controls, the mini games themselves. And you can try to avoid a rain of a variety of unidentified objects, which will apparently kill a gorilla on contact. Each game goes infinite and saves your high score, so you can kind of compare your scores each time. Each of the mini games have totally different mechanics, although they're still very, very simple games with one or two buttons each, but they each have a trait in common with each other. The longer you survive in the mini game, which in theory can go infinite, the faster the mini game gets and the more challenging it gets. And I did find it interesting that each mini game gets faster in different ways. It's just not that the game itself gets fast. One aspect of the game will get faster, but you are not, and it's interesting. Really took me back not only to Tamagotchi vibes of the 90s, but a lot of the simpler games we played as kids as we were watching this stuff like come out in real time and games getting more involved. Surprisingly addicting. I'm not just saying that. The mini games, like, it's almost nothing to program these, and it really reminded me of playing like ancestors of early Pong and getting more into it than I thought I would. What other features am I missing here? All the different animals have different foods to choose from. Your goal is to keep each pet alive until adulthood, which for each animal is broken up into three stages. Each stage of life will also unlock a new minigame per pet. So there's actually tons and tons of little minigames inside this game. So it looks simple, and this sure was a cheap game to make, and at its heart, it is still basically a Tamagotchi, just a big shiny one with lots of extra features. But there's tons of pets to unlock here. It's actually pretty crazy. They start you with three. There must be like 20 or 30 pets going on. Jeez. And each one of those is going to have different food. Each one of those is going to look different, have three different stages of life, and have different mini games and multiple mini games for pets. So that's crazy. Really quick before we go into rating here, a couple more features. You can decorate the space where each animal lives. These are a lot of the same assets as we had in previous Tamagotchi-esque games by this developer that I ended up looking up because I was curious about it, but they still look pretty cool. You can also name the pets, if I didn't mention this before. And now I see in my notes I said a couple more features, but I only listed one, so that's a wrap. that's the review.
All right, well, the game clocks in at $12.99. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, Joe, this game promised me an exotic pet, and according to my very expensive vet I saw last night, who is living a very cushy life thanks to me, my pet rabbit Brisket, maybe you've heard of him, is apparently an exotic animal. Yet, if there is a rabbit in this game, I have yet to unlock him, so that's going to be a deny it for me. Just kidding. I really tried to make this into a real review, as you could tell, instead of just being like, it's a Tamagotchi, I don't know. But this, okay, at that price, this isn't a buy it for me. This is a deny it at that price, and it hurts me to say it because I was surprised by this game. At the current sale price in the eShop, which I thought was the regular price, I would say it's a buy it. So I think this was a big overlook on their case. I was pleased and surprised a lot by this game. I thought $1.99 was the permanent price, and we'd see it pop up for 99 cents a lot on sale. I know this game was initially a phone app with in-app purchases. I tried to do my research here to understand the price. I'm guessing for the unlockable pets you'd need to earn in the Switch version, which I think is one of the more fun parts of the game, keeping the animals alive to find out what the different wild animals you could adopt are, because you don't even know what they are at first. While I was pleasantly surprised by the game, found it to have a lot more content than I was expecting. I can't say it's worth the full retail price. I don't think most people will be super interested in this game unless they're adults buying it to remember the 90s and have a nice blast from the past time with a couple added features. I could also see adults buying this for their kids to torture them, to say things like, yeah, little kid, back in my day, this is what a game was. Stop crying. I'll give you something to cry about. Honey,
listen,
get
here,
out, Pog.
Little shit.
Stay here and play Pog. The kid needs to see this. And at that, like, I just feel like people would be buying this for their kids left and right. if this were at 99 cents or $1.99, because parents would get a kick out of it. They might play it with the kid, and it's kind of cool that it has like the retro graphics. So on the off chance the devs are listening to this, I think you made a surprisingly cute and cool little app game. I think it works awesome on Switch. I think a lot of kids might want to play it, and you know, parents might want to get it for their kids, but I think that price needs to come down.
Now, I think that is kind of why there is the launch price until the 15th, September 15th. You could pick it up for $1.99. I know a lot of developers and publishers on the Switch will launch with really, really steep sales, because that's when most of the sales for games happen, is right off the bat.
That makes sense. And then we're seeing it in the new releases section of the eShop too. Yeah. So they're getting more visibility there. So yeah, I think you guys made a great game. I think, you know, maybe it's part of the marketing campaign itself to continue to offer it on sale. If that's the case, I hope, because I don't have bad things to say about this game for what it is other than that.
So $2, buy it. $13, maybe wait and buy it at $2.
Get it. Yeah.
All right. Next game, Mega Man X Dive Offline, developed and published by Capcom, released September 1st on Steam for $29.99. Mega Man X Dive reimagined the world of the Mega Man X series and now getting an offline version. Strengthen your characters and weapons with a variety of power-ups to make them all your own, then test them out in the side-scrolling action of what-if worlds in Mega Man X. For now, what is going on in Mega Man X Dive Offline?
I'm going to just point this out immediately off the bat. If anybody's listening to this and going, how does this compare to the original gacha game? The answer is, I couldn't tell you, because I don't do gacha games, and I avoided this game like the plague because it was a gacha game. So, as much as I love Mega Man games, this was a game that was kind of floating out there that I was like, I wonder what it's like, and I've heard good things, but I will never touch it. Well, apparently, somebody realized that there's a market of people like me who would not mind trying this game if they could get it at a flat cost. And guess what? That's what this title is. The concept is that the data, think of your game console as a living world that stored game data from all the players that have played on it and all the games that they played on that console. And you'll get the world of Mega Man Dive, in which something has gone wrong with this world and all the Mega Man game data has become corrupted. And you, the player, is asked by an AI NPC in the game to help repair it. And you do this by utilizing various characters from across the Mega Man franchise, X and otherwise, actually. And it involves a lot of collecting and blasting. So what ends up happening is you start out with like a basic Mega Man X character, the original X character, and you start out on the original highway stage. Similar to like mobile type games, the actual levels are broken up into like multiple stages, like 1-1, 2-3, 4, whatever, with the last one culminating with a final boss encounter. And each of these levels has 3-star goals that you can try to meet to, you know, unlock more stuff. But the general concept of the gameplay is that you're dumped on the level. It could be an auto-scrolling stage. It could be a normal, just left-to-right scrolling stage, a vertical stage. You have it. You name it. And your movements by default are you can run, you can jump, double jump, you can air dash off the jump, and you can dash off the ground. You can wall kick, just pretty much the basic kit of Mega Man moves. Or Mega Man X moves, except you get the air dash as by default, and they give you a double jump. You might be surprised to learn initially that X doesn't start with Buster in the traditional sense, because what he starts with is a weapon and a sub-weapon, being a normal, you know, Mega Buster pistol and the Z-Saber from Zero. If you hold down the fire button, you'll just fire a constant stream of bullets until you, quote-unquote, run out of bullets. The reason why you can run out of bullets is because there's a timer if you let it run up where it'll reload the gun and you can keep using it. You can switch between the two weapons or what have you. However, X, like other characters in this game, and there are a lot of characters in this game, have sub-abilities that make them unique from everyone else. And in this particular case, oh god damn it, in this particular case, Mega Man X's ability is his Mega Buster. You hit his skill 1 button, which on the Steam Deck I'm playing is L1, or sorry, yeah, L1. And when you press it, he'll start charging his gun. You don't have to hold it down. And you can fire your normal gun off to the addition to that. And when you let the button go and hit it again, he will fire the charged shot. Then a timer will commence, which will, until you can actually recharge it and use it all over again. And his other weapon is a hunter missile shot. So you play through the level, defeating enemies, and once you get to the end, the game will rate you and determine if you met those 3-star conditions and reward you with a bunch of loot. I am not going to go through all the loot because there's a bunch of junk, and I'll be perfectly blunt. There's a lot that I still understand about what I'm using to unlock what I'm just getting things if I can. But what ends up happening is, as you progress, you'll get a general level up. And as you level up, your character will gain more attack power and more just increase in various stats. And ultimately, eventually, you might reach a point where you're like, if you do like what I was doing, which was just playing without upgrading anything until the game pretty much walled you, you'll reach a point where the recommended quote-unquote power level for the stage is higher than your actual power level. And once you get to a certain level of that, you'll realize that you're dying in one hit, you can't beat anybody, yada, 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 what am I supposed to do? Well, back in the day, this was a gacha game, which meant you better hope you collected a bunch of gems over the course of 3 months to buy one meager upgrade for one character. But since this is no longer a gacha game, what they ended up doing was they allowed you to just kind of go and take what you're getting from these levels, including the originally rare materials, and go to a shop and just have at it with a bunch of stuff you can purchase, like new characters. You can upgrade the weapons and items that you have on the characters. You can get new equipment entirely and equip that to the characters and get them get new attack power that way. They don't give you free reign on every character right off the bat, though. And I kind of appreciate they do that because it allows you to kind of experiment with some of the other people. Instead, you unlock certain characters by fulfilling endgame conditions, like beating a certain stage at a certain point or what have you. But nonetheless, you'll still unlock these different characters and you can use them as you see fit. You can level them up, rank up their gear, and just kind of have a field day with these characters and ultimately eventually get to the end of the quote-unquote game. And there are also challenge levels and reflective of the original levels, too. And there's a lot of levels in this game. And if you get tired of those, once you get to a certain level, you unlock all the events the game had, too. Within reason, because from what I was reading online, there were some Capcom crossover characters that they couldn't put in for whatever reason, since it's technically a Capcom game, but the Capcom crossover characters are not here. Like, they had like Monster Hunter cross Mega Man characters, which would have been really cool to see here. That's but they are not here. Now, with that said, you might be thinking, well, man, we lost some characters. Well, there are 100 others. Bothered to unlock all those buggers, too. There's a ton of characters in this game. And quite frankly, I only have a few issues with the game in general, but they're not enough to make me go, this game sucks or anything crazy like that, because the game is definitely fun. The first thing is the fact that being that this is what this originally was designed to be, which was a mobile game, the traditional aspects of Mega Man X game that you might be expecting to get here aren't all here. You're not going to enter a level and start seeking out various armor parts and heart tanks or whatever. And the levels aren't large and sprawling. They're sectioned levels, which are intended to be beaten within a short period of time. But at the same time, there's like 900 of the buggers, so whatever. Enjoy your time there. But you're not going to be going through these elaborate levels and exploring and finding stuff. Though there are dark memory items hidden in certain levels, and they are likely used to unlock later levels in the game. But for the most part, you're going to be pretty much like running through levels, taking dudes out, and basically clearing them in record time. Secondly, there is an auto-aim feature on here. I believe you can turn it off if you want. I did not bother to, though I'm considering it, because it feels like cheating, but at the same time, the game was designed with that in mind, and I wonder how hard it would be if I was like, well, I can't aim backwards or running forwards anymore. But stuff like that is a factor, too. But initially, the game has an auto-aim feature going on there, where if you're aiming in a general direction, you're going to make the target, make the shot. And lastly, and this is the weirdest part of it, and it's almost like a conceptual question, really. Gacha games and their core is they're designed so that a player will start playing it. They'll do little bits and pieces, realize they kind of get walled off. They want to do more or unlock new things, and they eventually unleash their credit card to do more and kind of get caught up in the daily grind loop or whatever. But what happens when you remove the daily grind and you remove the chase of the, drop your money or it's going to take forever and lots of them, they just give you access to all the stuff. What happens? And that is something that a person may well have to decide for themselves with this game, because some people may well play this and damn near unlock everything it has to offer. I don't foresee a ton of people doing that, though. I picture more people being like, I have free reign over this. Okay, I'm going to play until I'm bored. I'm just going to stop. And quite frankly, I'm fine with it. That's kind of how it should be. But it did have me thinking that this whole time I was playing the game, in the sense of like, how many people would have liked this more if it was still considered a gotcha and they were caught up in the grind versus I can pay $30 for this and this is what I get. I don't know about that. And trust me, I've seen a number of people online that were actually having that exact argument where they're like, this isn't really a great game, quote unquote, but those same people would probably be like, oh man, I just got Crescent Mega Man with my 50 mythical mithril pieces. I can't wait to use them 2 times and then wait for the next version of them to come out. So, for me, this is actually legitimately fun. It has great music. It has some remixes of Mega Man themes that I honestly hadn't heard before. It's kind of cool to see characters that initially were never playable suddenly usable in this game. There are Mega Man characters that were in like Command Mission, which I've never played, that I can utilize, mess around with this in this game and just see how they just flow in a general sense.
I have Command Mission. I just haven't played it yet.
You should. I think that's one of the Mega Man games that actually is worth some money. I can't remember, but I remember that one having some value to it, too.
Who knows?
But it has a person named Cinnamon in it. Cinnamon.
I love Cinnamon.
But good Cinnamon. But like, it's just it's a genuinely fun game. And honestly, when I'm getting into the actual grind of it myself, I do enjoy beating levels and unlock getting the 3-star achievements and seeing who I can unlock from the store. Because again, there are a lot of Mega Man characters and variations of Mega Man characters in this damn game. It's fun to me. Some people might question the cost of it. I say the value is even also there, because I can promise you this, there are probably a number of people out there right now saying, I spent so much on this game and now people can pay $30 for it? That is a fact. You don't believe me? There are people out there making that claim right now. There's a lot of value in this game. The question is, will you get bored of it before you see most of it? And to me, I think it's something worth trying, because it is a good time. And if anything, it makes you want Capcom to actually make a new Mega Man X game, a genuine, legit Mega Man X game, because
I'd be happy if Capcom just brought the Mega Man Battle Network collection to Xbox.
That would be nice, too.
That'd be but really at least nice. I'd be really happy somewhere. If they did that, Capcom, if you're listening, Capcom.
He I'm wants fucking everything else. I want a new game.
Bring Dive to Xbox, game. Too.
Yeah, this is only on Steam right now, isn't it?
Yep, only on Steam, and it's $30, so what is your verdict?
I think it says, honestly, I'm not going to go with a buy it, because some people might not be down with the vibe for it, but I think it's a high end on the try it, at least. Don't come here expecting Mega Man X in the Mega Man X form. Come here expecting, a kind of parsed down but still fun Mega Man X experience.
Cool, sounds good. All right, next up is Draw and Color Kawaii, developed and published by Red Deer Games, released back in September on the Switch for $12.99, but there's a bunch of different versions out, which I'm sure we'll get to talking about. Coloring books are a great way to spend your time. It's a good way to settle the nerves and relax. It also develops your brain, just like eating fish. Use one of the pre-made templates or create your own illustrations. Brooke, what is going on in Draw and Color Eating Fish Edition?
Oh, we're going to talk about that eating fish line, because I loved it. Oh, yeah. So you might be wondering, why did I ask for a coloring book game? Am I into that? Hey, nothing wrong with liking coloring books. They're not really my thing. So why did I ask for this game? 2 reasons. One, my friend Gabby is a very nice lady. My friend Gabby from work. She also loves coloring. So I was thinking of her. I think she is just great. She made me wonder if I should actually give coloring a shot. She's so sweet. One time she asked me what I was doing with my weekend. I was like, oh, I'm going to go visit a little town and my little video game I'm playing, which is how I decided to try to communicate my big plans to her, because I know she's not a gamer. It was Tarrytown in Tears of the Kingdom, by the way, and that weekend was awesome. Anyway, Gabby is so nice. She was like trying to make me feel better because she clearly thought that was a little lame for my. She's like, oh, I hear you. I love coloring books. Second reason, that eShop description. that has my respect. Laughing my ass off, y'all wild. It also develops your brain just like eating fish. Dude, what? I had to have this game after I read that. I'm not kidding. Okay, so the first thing we need to do here is exactly what we did for Wildagachi. Rip this Switch eShop description apart. Dude, what's the first line? Trick question, don't answer that. That was nasty of me. Why, it's the name of the game, of course. Draw and color, kawaii, is technically the first line of the eShop blurb. What is the first word of the name of the game? Draw. Okay, scratch that out. You're not going to be drawing nothing in this game. Unless you're getting the version that came out now. Unless you also got the game from Joe and he was like, hey, Brooke, don't forget there's a ton of free DLC in this game in the eShop. So you could think ahead to download the draw screens, which are just a blank screen with all the coloring tools that they normally give you, just no lines for pictures to color in so you can do it yourself. So why am I being so mean about this? Because of my one main qualm with the game itself. You don't tell us our basic options that you clearly want us to know we have again and again, like how to save a drawing or open toolbars. You got to communicate this stuff with us, dude. I'm 36 years old next week. It's too late for me. I'm not going to figure this shit out. This is like if MS Paint was like, hey, we're a coloring book. Use our tools to color. You can also draw, but didn't tell you that you needed to install DLC to get a plain white screen. Yo, hope y'all enjoyed that. That was me mansplaining how DLC and coloring apps work. You're welcome. Wow, why did I write that in my notes? This is a late night. Okay, let's talk about the features of the game. Sometimes I just read these and I'm like, I should have revisited this between work and the show. Let's talk about the features of the game. You do get to start with 20 pages of coloring books. That's what all the free DLC of extra coloring book is about. These are separated into five categories of cute, cute, cute things to draw. Not just cute, kawaii, which in Japanese means something closer to adorable slash pathetic. Over here in America, basically means we put a happy face on a simple drawing of a piece of sushi or a muffin. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Okay, the categories are as follows. Picnic. Ice cream, represented by an adorable cat-shaped ice cream cone. Love it. That made me want this game, too. Sushi. Fast food, which is one word, according to them. And vegetables. The DLC categories, which were free to download. I took one look at, and I says to Joe, I says, man, these coloring book guys, they really know their target audience. Here are the categories. Beverages. It's got a drink on it. Confectionery, which is represented by a donut, even though this would normally have a candy connotation. Sweets. Which for some reason is different than confectionery, is represented by a lollipop. Pastries, which for some reason is a category, is represented by a gingerbread man, even though most people would think more of a donut as a pastry before they think of a cookie, but I digress. And snacks, which is represented by a bowl of tortilla chips. No qualms there. We do need to be putting some cheese sauce on those chips, but I'm going to let him have this one. That one was solid. Like the description says, you get 8 tools. The tools, most of them, they also have different thicknesses to choose from, like any good like paintbrush tool in a program like this. So that's cool. You get a pencil, a crayon, basically a magic marker or paintbrush that has like a solid line instead of a kind of scratchy looking pencil or crayon type line. We have a spray paint can. Hey, you know, fans of MS Paint will feel right at home with this one. You got an eraser. You also have an undo button. So lots of ways to take back any of the horrible things you've done. And now hate. You have a special tool. I don't know what to call it because they don't really label any of these. It's like a paintbrush, but it will only color inside the line. So this is different than, I don't know what to call this either, the fill color type tool that looks like a can of paint falling over in MS Paint that will just auto perfectly fill in everything with color, all the pixels inside the lines you've chosen to fill. I don't know if I described that right, but once again, MS Paint fans, you are going to know what I'm talking about. So the color in the lines tool is different than fill color. The paint can, because you can like color it whist. You can just scratch all over the place and it'll come out as you're scratching, but it'll never be outside the lines. So that was actually interesting to me. I was like, oh, I wonder if all virtual coloring books have this tool, because that, you know, that's kind of neat. So you may notice I said finger there. Let's talk about that. I had a hard time drawing with my finger. We don't have to use the touch screen here. We can also use the controls. You can sit back with the controller and color on the big screen if you really want to. But that's like coloring a coloring book with a mouse in MS Paint. Like, it's not great. You're probably not going to do that. I decided to use my finger for coloring. It works well, but like, fast forward to me hitting Chris up on Discord being like, hey, yo, what the hell? Are there styluses for Nintendo Switch? I Googled this before asking you, and I still can't tell. Laughing my ass off. This game made me really want a stylus for the Switch. I haven't wanted a stylus for a Nintendo product like ever. Like, I didn't even want one for the DS, really. But I want one for this game.
Do they sell styluses for the Switch?
They do, and with the power of Chris knowing everything about video games, he's like, yeah, a lot of them aren't official products, so you gotta be careful. He's like, a lot of the ones on Amazon kind of aren't real. So it's very interesting. It's kind of threw me down a rabbit hole of, like, wondering.
It's one of those things where it's like Amazon will just, like, show you, like, 12 different pictures of different styluses, but under one listing, so you just have no idea what is actually the thing you're purchasing.
Dude, very confusing. Like, it's not super, super often I Google something and I don't understand, and then I go crying to Chris and be like, dude, well, please help me. But yeah, so I broke my stylus in my smartphone the other day. I actually broke it in a really interesting way, and then I foolishly tried to put it back into the smartphone so I wouldn't be messing with it and, like, thinking about how it was broken and looking at it. And now half of the stylus is stuck in my phone. I don't know what to do. But long story short, this game made me, I was like, well, I'll replace the stylus for my smartphone. And this is kind of like an aside story. I'm about to wrap this up. I was like, well, I'll finally replace the stylus that goes in my smartphone. And I bet all styluses are the same. And I could probably use that for this coloring book. So, like, halfway through last week, I was like, got a next day delivery of a stylus and tried it. And actually, that didn't work either. And that's not a complaint about the game, but I found it very interesting. Once again, went crying to Chris and Bido was like, dude, did you know styluses don't even work? I don't know where I'm going with this. But I thought that was interesting. But yeah, this really threw me down a rabbit hole. I want a stylus for this game. I'm not going to buy one for this game. It does make me wonder, though, is there a whole, like, coloring on Nintendo Switch circuit going around for adults where they just already have a stylus, and would they, like, laugh at me for buying this game without already having a stylus? Like, is Gabby laughing at me behind my back? It's hard to say, but it makes you think. I've successfully dragged this out to a full review as well, and I just want points for this. But yeah, wrapping up here, music. They give you music to color to. I like the music. No music in Wild Agachi, by the way, which is fine. But this one's got a really groovy, chill vibe, and you don't get to pick the music. They kind of just throw you a random one, but I was pleasantly surprised by this. So yeah, those are my feelings on this game.
Rupert says that they use a stylus for Picross games.
Yo, what is a Picross game? I should really know this. Oh. Chris, what's a Picross game?
Like Picross, you need to get on that. They're so good.
You need to play Picross. There's like 40 of them on the Switch.
I've heard that word. I bet I'm going to...
You might recognize it. It's like this grid with numbers on it, and you basically kind of use the numbers to color in parts of the grid so that you make a picture.
Oh, interesting. This looks like Minesweeper.
Yeah, like a combination of math and coloring in a grid.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I am definitely going to try this because I'm very curious about this now. Even if I end up hating it, it will be fun to talk about together.
There's no way you're going to hate that. I'd put money on it.
Whoa!
I'll hit you up with some interesting Switch games that utilize this gameplay.
Okay, cool. Yeah, throw me your take for first one I should try, and I will try.
She does the visual novels, right?
Oh yeah, she loves
to buy numbers.
Oh, and you know, she goes to little towns in her video games for her weekend plans. Like, I hear you. I love coloring. I love coloring too. Sorry, I got to call back to that. I was having a great time with that.
Anyway, Drawn Color Kawaii is $12.99. What are your thoughts on this one?
Oof. I got to give it the same review as Wild Agachi, although I don't think this one is even on sale. Like, I like a lot about this game. I was pleasantly surprised by a lot of it. I like that the game has music at this price point, but that's about the only thing. It's not that the music's not worth it, but I just... I have, like, my feelings typed out here on the page, but I still don't know how to say it. Like, I don't know what's up with the pricing of this game or the other one we reviewed tonight. Both could be buy it, so if they just knew what they were really offering, like, and how much. Sorry, that's my medicine alarm. I gotta remember to turn that off next time. The pricing, like, I wonder about this pricing. Like, is it, like, with the last game, is it part of their marketing campaign to just, like, mostly have it at a discount to sort of make people buy it? Like, does that work for people? Because I want to give this game a buy it. Like, I think even for, like, $3, maybe $7, if, like, we had more coloring book pages.
I mean, they do offer a lot of free DLC that people could grab to expand the game.
They do, and I downloaded all of that. And even considering all the free DLC, I just think this is a little steep. I wish they would come down on it a little so I could give it a better review, because overall, I like this more than I thought. I don't think it's going to change my mind about coloring. I don't think that's really going to be the hobby for me, but I'm glad I tried it. This is a soft landing point. I've already got my visual novels, man. I got enough going on over here. I wish I could give it a good review at this price point. I can't. I got a note, I do think they're having some issues as far as, I don't think anything's wrong with Wild Agachi, for instance, but I still said the price was a little high. For this one, I feel like there's just some oversights here, especially considering that this is, been re-released. This is being released again, so it can kind of go with the Magnificent Edition, which we didn't review, but, maybe someday we'll review that one on here. They don't tell you how to save the image. They don't tell you how to toggle from different toolbars, so you spend some time lost in it. And they don't even tell you in the game, hey, there's a ton of free DLC, and if you want to actually utilize the drawing feature of this game, you're going to need that. It's not very well labeled in the shop. There's just some misses here. I want to give it a good review. I got to give it a deny at this price, but I think that if you're into this sort of thing, I think that the drawings are absolutely adorable, and I could see enjoying this. I just don't even think the people who are into this are going to want to pay quite so much for this. So,
well, I guess throw it on a wish list and keep an eye out for a sale.
Yep.
All right. Well, one final game to talk about tonight is called Gourmet Warriors from Cubite Classics, developed by Pico Interactive, published by Cubite Games, released August 31st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99. Save the city of Zeus heaving magic city from the attempt of demonic mutants, robots take over. What the? And eat some tasty gourmet recipes while at it. Okay, that made sense. Chris, what's going on in Gourmet Warriors, and why doesn't that intro make any sense to me?
Who even knows? It's supposed to be Zeus Heaven Magic City, but it's
amazing. Love that.
Yeah, here's
where did
actually
I get that?
Huh?
Where did I get that text? That's so
maybe it's
broken.
In the maybe
on the
it's
Xbox
in the,
store. Maybe.
Maybe it's in the Switch store. Let me see.
It wasn't the Switch store. I'm wondering if maybe it was on the Xbox store. They didn't.
Yeah,
upload.
That's not from the Oh, no, it does. It is on the Switch store, too. Save the city of Zeus heaving magic from the attempt of demonic mutant robots to take over and eat some tasty gourmet recipes while you're at it. Both ended with exclamation points. Well, let me explain to you, actually even better, let me read to you the plot that is on the actual Wikipedia entry for this game. In the year 20XDX... the metropolis known as Zeus Heaven Magic City has made a miraculous recovery from the fires of a nuclear World War III. In order for you to survive in this city of power and technology, it is necessary to ingest protein in whatever food that can be found. The secret organization Bath is a force that grows and expands every day, causing strife and a violent crime throughout the city. Zeus is in danger of ruin as the forces of Bath were constantly instilling their will upon the city by force. Zeus's leaders, however, have launched a secret project that gives them optimism on the prospect of defending the city against Bath. The project looks to enhance and to create a soldier wearing the special body armor, the strongest of the strongest body armor. From this project, the conception of the idea to modify the human body was conceived, and three humans, Bonjour, Mademoiselle, and Très Bien, have been transformed into fighting machines. So it makes perfect sense when you read it that way.
I'm following along on the page, and his dramatic reading of that made it sound like it makes way more sense than it does. Just as that was actually an amazing job.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so Gourmet Warriors is a this was a Super Famicom game that originally came out in 1995, actually called Gourmet Sentai Barayaro. It is a late-era belt action, as you would call it in Japan, beat-em-up, as you would call it in the U.S. This is an obscure of the obscure, the kind of stuff you would normally see Pico coming out with, because, Pico definitely specializes in actual 16-bit games you've likely never heard of, and maybe shouldn't hear of. But, The thing about belt action, so if you think about it, you know, it started off with stuff like Double Dragon and, you know, the Kunio Kun series that we were just talking about, even with River City Ransom and stuff, and kind of evolved into like your final fights and, you know, all that good stuff. Your Captain Commando, which is another totally insane game. Mutation Nation. I mean, the early 90s were just absolutely stuffed full of belt action games because it was an easy way, you know, because obviously the biggest sprites is the best graphics. So this is the best way to get big old sprites in your arcade cabinets, you know, really attracting players to come in and spend quarters getting unfairly beaten from outside of the screen, which is how these games always go. By 1995, pretty much all the ideas had been used. We already had three beat 'em ups specifically based in like high fantasy, like, you know, like knights doing the beat 'em up thing. Like, we'd already done that three times on the SNES. Final Fight 3 was coming out, in fact, where they gave Mike Hagar a huge like ponytail and like, you know, big ol' like combat pants and boots, but still no shirt. Like, it was an amazing time. Basically, anything goes. And at this point, these, you know, fairly obscure developers, I can't actually find much information on. Fupak Fakur, I'm sure, is the full name. And Wins.
Oh my god!
came out with this game, and it is, you know, to put it mildly, it is bazonkers. I'm not going to repeat the story. That is the story. You won't get any of a better story than that, especially in the game. Like, it's even more confusing in the game. Like, it's one of those things, like, the more you know about it, the less you understand it. So, you know, at this point, if you feel like you understand nothing, you can go down from there. but anyways, so you select from three different characters, the strong, slow fighter, Bonjour, the female fighter who is faster and weaker, Mademoiselle, and Très Bien, the drummer for Green Day. And he's kind of like a kabuki guy. He's kind of in between. It's super like set up like the Ninja Warriors. Like, you know, it's very much like those three characters. Very much like your three character brawler. However, there's actually up to 10 players that you can select. We'll get to that in a minute. That's your bonus for listening to this dumbass review. once you have selected your character, Mademoiselle, then you are going to start in the game and start beating up characters. You have a button for beating up, a X button for jumping. I don't approve of this. You have a B button that does nothing, and then a Y button that makes your character pose. You literally just push Y, hold it down, and press the directional button, and your character will flex and show off and stuff for no reason. This is only in the game for aesthetics. It has no function, and it's amazing. So yeah, like, basically you just go through the game, beat up the characters as best you can, using a combination of jump kicks, throws, beating ups, and of course kicking off screen, which is the main thing, until you finally end the game by never beating the second boss, because the second boss is bullshit. His name is Sewa. That's literally S-A-Y space W-H-A !!! And he is impossible to beat. I have no idea how to beat him, so I don't know what the game looks like from here. It looks pretty cool. But yeah, the game up to that point is pretty fun. There's lots of bizarre things that can happen in this game. For one, there's a specific weird little mascot-type robot running around. All the enemies in this game are bizarre-looking. But if you punch this thing once, it will drop a tool, and if you pick up that tool, a second character will appear. It is a CPU-controlled second player in a beat-em-up. That's the first time I've ever seen that happen. You know, Weisenheimer's out there, let me know if this has happened prior to this 1995 Super Famicom beat-em-up, but there is a computer-controlled second player that is a clone of your own character, Mademoiselle. So yeah, that's a really cool thing. The other interesting thing is that, so like in the game Final Fight, when you defeat enemies, sometimes they will drop things. In Final Fight, it's weapons or just like bricks for bonus points. Not even gold bricks, they're just bricks. or like a whole turkey that will restore your life. Well, in this game, it's ingredients. They will drop like a vegetable, a mushroom, a protein. Sometimes it just says protein. Like some kind of meat, rice, you know, tofu. And you pick all this stuff up, but sometimes it will give you a benefit right away. In fact, this is one of the games where you can actually have boss health. That is to say, you know, your yellow life bar can build up past the full yellow and start going into green, which is, again, something that I have not seen in other fighting games. Like, you only get to see him go up to full yellow, but then you know, get to an boss enemy or whatever, and he's got, like, white, which turns to, you know, green, which turns to yellow, which turns to red, you know. And, you know, because they have so much more health than you, but you can actually build up health. And part of doing that is if, when you collect these food ingredients at the end of the stage, after you defeat the stage's boss, you sit down at the dinner table and a menacing robot butler chef will create for you a dish made out of any two of the ingredients that you have picked up. And so you get to kind of mix and match and see what works best. And if you get, like, a really good combination, then you'll get a huge amount of bonus health, which you'll need because you only have one life in the entire game.
Boy.
However, you have one life and then it's game over, but if you select continue and choose your character again, you actually start off from the last room you died in. So you effectively have infinite continues, but only one life. This is why the second boss is so hard. He's got a ton of life. It's very hard to fight him. And once you die, you have to start that fight over. You don't get to burn up quarters in this one. So that is a really interesting way to run a railroad. I would argue maybe not the best, but that's okay because, you know, you at least get weird-ass stories about your characters and stuff in the attract mode. Like I said, this game fully relies on being a completely bonkers experience. And here's the final piece of the bonkers puzzle. I discovered this only just today. If you are on the character select screen and you hold down the R and L button, you can freely move around the cursor, which is a butter knife that you would normally just use to statically select between Bonjour, Mademoiselle, and Très Bien before you choose Mademoiselle. And but you can now freely move around the knife, and if you go to specific spots on the screen, you can select 7 additional secret characters, all of which are regular enemies in the game. All but 2 of which are completely useless. Some of them can't attack. 3 of them are suicide characters. That is to say, the first time you attack an enemy, you die.
What's the point of that?
There's no point. What's the point to any of this? This game has me questioning everything. So yeah, like, definitely what you'll want to do with this game, if you decide to pick it up, is to definitely get a second player, because you're going to need one. And y'all can just fight over Mademoiselle, and the other person can be the weird, like, mascot thing that dies in one hit if you want to. Or, you know, you can actually pick a Playboy bunny. She's not that good, but she's one of the actual playable characters.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the game's $10. What do you think of it?
God, I don't know if any of that sounded interesting enough to you. I mean, this game's really fun, and it's definitely a piece of history in the 16-bit era, and especially for fans of beat-em-ups, this is the first time this game has appeared in English, and I mean that. There's not even a good fan translation out there.
Oh, wow.
There's a fan translation that changed.
Chris, did my internet die?
No, I thought it was me at first. I think Chris died.
Internet died.
Dang it.
Or something. He just said, hello. Dang it. Hey, there he is.
Welcome back.
Yay, he's back.
Let me tell you where you cut off. You were like, oh, this is the first, like... It's not even a good fan translation. And then you said 2 air horns, and that's where you dropped off. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Brooke. Yeah, I was just going to say, this is the only way to play this game in English, and you're going to want to play it in English because it's, again, thoroughly insane. The fan translation is not even fully done, so there's like a little bit of a fan translation out there for the original SNES game, or, you know, Super Famicom game. The Super Famicom game itself is hard to find. So, you know, this is, like I said, it's a piece of history. I would say for that, it's worth it. It's a Pico game, so there's not much in the way of extras or anything. You know, there's a difficulty toggle, which helps, but you know, I could never get past the second boss, even on the easiest mode. There's CRT filters, there's save states, so save states might be the way to go. But it's faithfully recreated, and it's, like I said, I appreciate this amount of love even going into these obscurities, and so I would say it's a buy it if you are in the market for an old-ass belt action game that that is, like I said, weird as hell.
Cool.
I really wanted this to be a buy it when you were describing it, because every part of it just put a big smile on my face, man. It sounds awesome.
And I don't know if it's available anymore. I tried to find it, but apparently Pico even published a SNES cartridge of this. So if you really want to hunt, because it came out years ago. Yeah.
Well, good luck if you can find that, I guess.
I Chris, actually think he's gone again. I think he abandoned us again. Chris.
Hello.
Oh my God.
Why is your shit breaking at the end of the show?
It's the internet.
Chris. Oh no. Didn't y'all just get a new router like 9 days ago?
Yeah, we did.
Haha. Man, still
time
got
to call
it.
The internet company and be like, listen, your router sucks.
That sucks.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, music this episode to wrap things up. Chris, we're going to play some stuff from you, aren't we?
Oh yeah, all sure. Right.
Tell us about it.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a funky video game cover band called Super High Tops. And just the other day, we released our new video, which is two songs from the game Hylix 2.
Ooh.
An indie obscurity that has quite a...
We lost him again.
Oh, no. There it is. But... Well, he'll come back. He'll come back. We know. We've been down this road before.
I was at the show where they covered a Hylix song, and I remember this because I have a note in my phone... where I wrote the game name down because everyone was just screaming and being like, that was so good. What the hell game is that from? Like, that was such a good track. So I can.
To me, those are the best. Like, when you go to these game cover shows, like, there's another band I like called Steel Samurai, and they had a penchant for, like, playing, like, these obscure tracks from games that people never heard of. And there's always this concern where people will say things like, well, if the listeners don't recognize the track, they're not going to want to listen to the song. I'm like, no, if you play well enough, they're going to want to know what game it was from because it was really good. Like, those are the best ones to me. Like, you can get another Storm Eagle play if you want, but no, give me some of that Hylix. I want to hear that weird shit.
I would, like, want to hear that again now. I can't find it in my phone, but I know it's in there somewhere.
We're going to listen to a song from Super High Tops to wrap up the show. Even though we have lost Chris. Rest in peace, Chris. We've
lost one high top.
You ever notice how you never see Super High Tops and Chris in the same place at the same time? I'm sorry, I couldn't say that without laughing. That was bad, you guys.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through. Thanks to everyone for being here, doing your things. Thanks to Chris for coming on and having his internet die literally at the very end of the show. The timing is perfect. He just said internet totally shut off. It's a good thing the review ended. So.
There's a little internet connection that could.
Even the internet is like, listen, guys, your show's going too long. You got to shut the fuck up already. So we're gonna end with some Super High Tops. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I mean, I gotta just shout out to Chris's internet for knowing the theme of the show was all our stuff broke over and over again in the last week. So maybe the week and the nightmare can be over now.
Thank you. We'll be right back.